is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt, get me out, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might have...
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, this is the Shame-Free Zone. I'm your host, Veronica Monet. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're taking on a rather broad topic tonight. Sex, God, and art. Not necessarily in that order. And I'm actually pretty excited about this topic. I just did write the preface for a book, where an artist named Nikita Duncan paints orgasms. So I've really been kind of delving into this whole thing about art and sex and the meaning of life. Oh, and by the way, just to give a shameless plug to my book, it's Orgasms, Art, and Psyche, and it's actually an art book by Nikita Duncan, but I've got the preface, and Dr. Philip Zimbardo from Stanford University has the introduction. And if you want a copy of it, just contact me. I'll actually be posting a link to it on Facebook in just a couple of minutes here. And I hope you are tuning in on Facebook, because we're going to start the conversation off. I've actually put up something called an Amandela. And an Amandela is made by Amanda G. Wright, who's my guest tonight. Now, Amanda is actually calling us from Quebec tonight, so we're very happy to have one of our Canadian neighbors speaking to us in the Shame-Free Zone. But let me just tell you a little bit about her. First of all, she's a mother, an artist, a writer, and a poet. But when she turned 30, she had a spiritual awakening, and she calls it monolithic proportions. Okay, she said it opened her heart, her mind, her body to the truths of life. And although her natural abilities were always available to her, it was only after this awakening that she truly realized her potential as a visionary, a speaker, a prophet, and a muse. So we're going to find out what she has to say about sex, art, and God. And we're going to not only interview her tonight, but view some of her art. So if you follow me along on Facebook, I'm actually going to be putting some links up to her website, and I've already got an Amandela that she created just for me up on Facebook, and eventually I might even reveal something else she created for me. It's kind of personal, so we'll see. We'll see if I get inspired enough to put it up there. Anyway, Amanda, welcome to the Shame Free Zone, and thank you so much for joining us all the way from Canada.
Hi, Veronica. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. So are you in, Quebec? That's like the east part, right? Or
yeah,
in the middle? I'm trying to remember where that is.
We're in the northern part of Quebec, but eastern part of Canada.
So you're
up in the Laurentians.
Not way up in the cold, but
up in the Laurentians. It's really beautiful up
there. Well, I was thinking more of the time zone. Your children are probably already to bed, huh?
Well, my little guy's been in bed for a while.
Yeah, I would imagine, because it's about midnight there.
Yeah, but I'm always up at this time anyway. It's the only time that it's quiet enough for me to create anything.
All right.
I have a 3.5-year-old son.
And I don't have a 3.5-year-old son, and I still feel that way because the phones don't stop ringing, you know?
And
that's a good time when there's no phones and very little email.
Yes.
So, now, how old are you now?
I'm 31.
Okay, so a year ago you had this huge awakening.
Can you tell us a little bit about what precipitated it? Well, the birth of my son 3.5 years ago really started to change things for me. But it was about a year and a half ago. It was New Year's Eve, and I was looking in the mirror, just had my shower, and I was getting ready to go to bed, and it had dawned on me that I hadn't done any New Year's resolutions that year. And I had been during this time reading a lot, really on a spiritual path, and yet nothing really seemed to click. And then all of a sudden, in that moment, looking in the mirror, the answer just came to me, and it was that something I'd heard over and over and read over and over, that it really starts with loving yourself. And I had to realize that I didn't love myself. In fact, I didn't really like myself very much. And I had pretty much for most of my life been very prejudiced against myself, felt very insecure, and always living in fear and guilt, and just never feeling that I fit in, never really being kind to myself. I never took time for myself. I was just not good to me. And it was in that moment that I decided that the change had to start there and with me. And I decided to become my own best friend. And that's really when everything really started to take off for me, and I really started to put into place the changes that I wanted to see and be in my own life.
Now, had you been an artist before this?
I had been an artist. I had been studying art, and interestingly enough, I never felt that I was good enough to be an artist, per se, so I had been, prior to the birth of my son, studying to become an art teacher, as I figured those who can't do. And then I had been painting a little bit before my son was born and a little bit after, but it was really I didn't spend a lot of time on it. I didn't really work with it or practice with it. And it was during this time, at the same time, that my art just really started to take off. And I found that one of the parts of loving myself was truly loving myself and starting to, I really started to masturbate a lot more often, and I started to really feel that it was taking time for myself. It was worshiping.
Well, let's just slow down there for a minute. Slow your roll, girl.
Yeah,
I think our listeners are probably, they're like the little cartoon character with their heads going back and forth going, what does she say? So you weren't just talking about, like, you know, metaphorically loving yourself. You're talking about actually loving yourself on your
I went all the way. Yes. Well, it started with I had to love myself on a personal level, but then I realized that I kind of no holds barred realized, well, wait a minute, I want to love myself all the way. And it was also, I realized it just my views on everything kind of started to change. And I started to, prior to that, I had just felt, I'd never thought that was something, I did it, but I felt always guilty and almost shameful of it. It was something that was done in the dark and it was a secret. And then suddenly I started to really take that time and use that time to connect with myself. And this is kind of the connection between the sex and the God and the art, because when that was happening, my art got a lot better really fast. Because
God,
I was
looking at this
getting in touch with my passion.
Photo. The photo that you added of yourself on Facebook here.
You're holding a
butterfly. You're naked, but your hair, your long hair, comes down to cover some strategic points, and then you have like I don't know what that is, a flower or something covering your yoni.
That's the symbol for the root chakra.
Okay, the symbol for the root chakra. This is an absolutely gorgeous photo. I'm going to hit like, and then hopefully it'll post over on my wall as well. Just gorgeous. You're really gifted, you know.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm finally starting to really appreciate.
So I'm really sorry to interrupt you, because let's go back. So masturbation is what creates a beautiful photo like this, or a painting, I mean.
Is this
a painting, by the way? Are you using oil color, watercolor?
This was mixed media. I used watercolor, and then I also used pencil crayons and ink and also some chalk pastel.
Wow. It's just beautiful. I love it.
With a tiny little bit of digital magic for the sunburst at the root.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay. So for those of you who are up on my wall right now, I just posted it as something that I liked on my wall. It's beautiful, beautiful. And below that on my wall, I've got the mandala. So go ahead. So masturbation leads to great art. And how on earth do you make a connection between those?
Well, I found, the connection is passion and the idea of, during this time, it wasn't just about sex. The way I said it, I wasn't just horny. I was horny about life. Everything suddenly started to taste better, and I just got really committed to enjoying my own life and really being present in all my moments and being aware of everything, of when I was eating something. I just really paid attention to how it tasted, and I found everything just became more sensual, more. I just felt more alive, and then that translated into all of my artwork. I really started to blossom, and I felt that that same passion carried over into my artwork and my writing and my everyday life. and it was like basically I started my fire and got my passions really turning and going, and I needed that energy, and it's like almost like it was a kickstart too. I got a boost of confidence, and I started to really feel better about myself, and then everything that I did was better.
I'm trying to figure out, and I'm basically asking this question, of course, from my listeners. Did you read a book or something? Take a workshop? Did somebody tell you this was going to happen? I mean, how did you just stumble across this by yourself?
It started really as just something I had been watching. It started about 2 years ago on Oprah. Dr. Laura Berman is her name.
Laura Berman. Yes.
And when she said something on one of the shows that just stuck with me. During the time I decided to really be kinder to me. And one quote from her was, "I love my pleasure." And I really started to understand. Okay, well, I want to love my pleasure, and it was like almost as if I needed that permission from an outside source to say it's okay to masturbate, and I just started to feel less shame about it. And then from that point on, I really during that time I found I was feeling closer when I was having an orgasm, when I was worshiping myself, I felt closest to God, and I really didn't at that time understand the connection, and it confused me. And I started to research and realize that sex and spirituality have only been separated in the last 2,000 years or so. And prior to that, there was the connection, the innate connection between the two was understood. But we've forgotten that in the last 2,000 years. And lucky for me, I happened to meet someone, an artist on Redbubble, and he happened to be the author of the book Plan B, Secrets of the Divine Feminine. And this book, literally life-changing, it really explained and filled in all the gaps of and connecting spirituality and the connection to it. I don't feel that it matters the name, whether it be consciousness or God or spirit or universal life energy, life force. It's all the same place that we send our prayers to.
And I think you're referring to Terry Hinkle, who's also been on my
yes.
show.
Yes, Terry Hinkle, the author of Plan B, and he is
yes,
this
it,
book.
And so far he's the one who's posted. He said, "I can't wait to hear this interview. It will be fun and inspiring." Hi, Terry, if you're listening, I'm sure he is.
He said he would, so I'm hoping that he is. And it was after reading this book that really everything just clicked for me, and I really started to understand that it wasn't by accident that this kind of sexual awakening was happening at the same time as a spiritual awakening, and it was that they were actually interconnected, and that I was able, I think, to have the spiritual awakening because I had opened myself up and just really started to understand. That's a powerful energy. The Kundalini energy at your root is a powerful energy, and we can you can learn how to use it to your own benefit. You can learn how to harness it, and basically the idea of I posted on your wall last week about basically it's starting a fire down below, and that energy, that fire, that passion. Once you find your passion and you start to follow it, it can then take you to a higher place. It's the idea of doing what you love and really being immersed in all your moments.
Now, when I look at your art, I have no doubt that you've had some kind of an awakening because it's amazing. And I'm over at your website right now, and I just posted a link to that on Facebook as well. But, I mean, you are very, very prolific, and your art is, you were talking about, loving your pleasure and even enjoying your food more. And I noticed that your art reminds me of some kind of a feast.
Well, I almost feel like the last 18 months has been a feast for me. For the first 27, 28 years of my life, I really was someone who I was very insecure and very shy and very, I was constantly, I had this constant in my head, this chaotic thinking, and I was constantly just feeling lesser than, essentially, and always and never comfortable, no matter where I was, certainly not in my own skin. And so suddenly to have changed that, to have made the decision and realized that it's possible to just completely change your life by changing your perspective.
Wow.
And that's exactly what I did, and it's undeniable that it was from this change my art really just, it blossomed, it changed. But even as a woman, I've changed, and I've become just more a more authentic version of myself. And the biggest thing was dropping the shame, dropping the guilt, and realizing that I think a lot of us spend a lot of our time feeling regretful or wishing we had done things differently. And I know I certainly had, and I had a lot of guilt and just shame about my past. And then it dawned on me one day that I was having a beautiful day, and I realized that every single moment up leading up until this point was absolutely necessary, good and bad, however I had chosen to look at it, had led me to this new version of myself. And so I was suddenly able to just drop all of it, because it was, I can see it for what it was, which is all of our lives, they're lessons and experiences and learning experiences.
So you had shame about your past.
Well, also, just more than anything, I had grown up, I'm the middle child of three. Both my sisters have passed now from cystic fibrosis. And so when you're living with your, both my, I was healthy and both my siblings were sick. And I think that nobody at any point told me that I was less important or less worthy. But I think that I just, unless I was bleeding from the head or on fire, I felt bad to really draw attention to myself, because there was always something else bigger or going on. And I think I carried that over into my teenage years, and certainly into my adult years. And it really, and I just had this guilt, basically, for breathing, guilt for being healthy. And I had, and again, this was something that I had to realize and go through. Started about 18 months ago, where I realized that I had to just start being nicer to me, because it didn't really matter where I picked up this belief that I was lesser than, but I needed to stop it.
Well, it's really a good example, too, of how parents can try to do as good a job as possible, and still we grow up with issues.
Absolutely. I had that realization when I had, I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I'd given my son all of my attention for 3 years, one-on-one, and then I took him to daycare for his first day, and he didn't want to leave. He threw himself on the floor and said, no, go. And I felt so bad. And then it was a great moment for me, because in that moment I realized, you know, you can be the best parent you can be, but someday, you know, 20 years from now, he's still going to be sitting on some shrink's couch telling them how it's all my fault.
Right, exactly.
And I think that we just put a lot of, I know I had put a lot of pressure on myself that was really unnecessary. And it was really, and I was worried about what, you know, what will they think if I do this? Well, who are they really? And they're not really, they aren't really there when you need them. The fictional they that we're all worried about.
Exactly. And you're right, they aren't there when we need them.
And I was lucky enough that it was one of my biggest moments was when my son was born, the cord was around his neck. And he wasn't breathing. And there was silence where we were expecting a cry.
Oh my God.
In those seconds, and it felt like an hour, but it had to have been only seconds, suddenly I just realized my whole life I had been worried about and just about things that really weren't significant, and I had been worried about what people would think and what will they say. And in that moment I realized, well, first of all, where are they now? And second of all, if he doesn't cry, if he's not okay, then none of it doesn't matter. And then he cried.
Oh.
And I promised myself to remember that every day, that, you know, that's what's important. There's really only a handful of things, and that's usually the people in our lives that really, really matter when it comes down to brass tacks. And all the things or limitations we put on ourselves are really just things that we're imposing on ourselves, and they're not necessary. And that I really, in that moment, started to understand that this is my life, and I want to be an active participant.
Wow. Well, this is a lot of awareness at what I would consider a young age, 31.
I consider myself very blessed that I'm 31 years old and I'm at this place. And I've had a lot of experiences and some would say difficult or hard, but for me, and I think I did think that they were at one time, but now I look at it and see it that really I've been blessed that I've had some extreme moments, but in those extreme moments have been always the most clear moments of my life, and I think that has to do with really being able to surrender to whatever life is giving you in that moment, and to just stop
resisting. It's really interesting. So the young woman that I worked on the book, Orgasms, Art, and Psyche, Nikita Duncan, in some ways, I mean, you guys are very different people, but you both speak in this way that is incredibly animated and excited and juicy and fully alive.
Yeah, that's how I like that description very much. I just that's how I feel as I'm fully. I had been almost asleep before, and now I just feel like I woke up from a really long nap, and I'm really hungry for everything. And it's just, I've just found for me, it's a great way to be. And I'm not saying that all people can necessarily masturbate their way to a spiritual enlightenment, but I certainly did, and it was, you know, a really fun way to go. I mean, I could have gone to a temple for like 3 or 4 years. I could have gone on a walkabout or gone to study higher learning, but I did it right from home, and I'm pretty impressed with the way I did it. It was a good turn. And it didn't cost a cent, so it was good.
And it didn't cost a cent. That's right. So, well, tell us a little bit. Since you brought up this conversation about masturbation, I want to hear about how often and how.
Definitely at least once a day. I find
okay.
that I really try to make time for it once a day. And the old me would be blushing up a storm, but definitely once a day. And I really, it's not always, you were talking about this last week. For me, it's not always necessarily about sex. It's more about, I've learned that this is just, it's a powerful creative energy. In your root chakra, this is where you manifest from. This kundalini energy is really what powers. And it's your connection to really Mother Earth, and it's what powers your creative endeavors. So basically, oftentimes I will bring myself to orgasm, but when I'm orgasming, I'm oftentimes not even thinking about something sexual per se. I'm more using it as a time to meditate and to basically connect my energy I feel close to God when I'm in that place, and I usually send out that energy with intent, whether it be for something I'm working on or someone that I care about, sending them good positive energy. But it's not just about. That's what's interesting is the change in it. Is at 30 years old, it certainly wasn't the first time I masturbated, but it was the first time that I suddenly gave myself the freedom to. To just allow myself to enjoy that time, and I started to really be aware that it wasn't just about sex. It wasn't just about getting off. It was not something that I did because I need to. It was something that I planned to do, and I would make time for. And it was really my time to connect to myself as well.
So let's get into a few more specifics, just for our listeners here, because you know I want you to think like you were teaching a workshop here. Because
okay.
Some of the questions that I would have would be okay. What time of day, what do I do before, during, after, what do I think about while I'm doing it, what do I use to do it, you know, I mean, you know, like sometimes I teach something called masturbation meditation, and I teach people that, you know, augment their masturbation with their meditation practice, you know, to actually marry the two. So, for instance, in my case, a typical masturbation meditation for me would start off with maybe some qigong to get into my body and you know, stretch and move, followed by about a half hour of my meditation practice, which involves conscious breathing exercises and chanting. And then when I'm done with that, we're talking about, you know, at least 40 minutes, maybe an hour, of me really doing a lot of breathing, stretching, getting into my body, chanting. And then, you know, candles, incense, sensuous music. And then when what I actually think about very rarely has anything to do with sex. I usually am thinking about expansive thoughts, you know, like something perhaps that I want to accomplish that I think will make the world a better place, or something personal that I want for myself. So, you know, might be feeding my desires, my affirmations about what I want to attract into my world. And I focus on breathing through the urge to orgasm so that I can extend the arousal as long as possible. And so anyway, that would be how I would describe that about, you know, and I would like to hear you describe what it is you do.
Well, for me, it's usually, typically the evening is the best time for me because when my son's in bed, or if he's at daycare, then I happen to really enjoy 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Is just, I love 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I seem to get an energy burst. But
interesting.
What's also important for me is I keep reminding myself through the day that I'm going to take this time for myself. So it's almost like I'm building up anticipation. And then I usually go in my room, and sometimes I have soft music playing, but sometimes I'll light a candle. And I usually just lay down on my bed and get comfortable, and then I start to breathe and be conscious of my breath. And I'll oftentimes run through, I like to do a chakra meditation where I picture starting with the root and then the sacral chakra and moving up. I like to imagine each of the energy wheels spinning brightly and one at a time and move my way up through. And I like to do that a few times and get myself really clear and centered. And then then after that, I take maybe 20 minutes of just breathing and centering and just being calm and feeling inside my body. And then,
and then
I would typically begin to masturbate. And I try oftentimes to do, as you were saying, to let it build, let the energy and the orgasm build, and then when I and not release, and just really build it up, I really concentrate on my root chakra, and I try to remind myself of if I sometimes phone will ring or there'll be a distraction, something will interrupt, and I try to, if that happens, I get back to the place by just reminding myself that I love my pleasure and concentrating on whatever part of my body that I'm touching and just really feeling inside my body and also just paying attention to myself and my own breathing and connecting in that way. And then usually at the time of climax is when I would then release the energy with intention. And it's always a positive affirmation, whether for myself or for the greater good or for someone specifically. And that would be typically how that goes. However, I have a theory also on vibrators, which is, you know, I know a lot of busy women. I'm a busy woman, and sometimes you just don't have a whole lot of time. And the way I feel about vibrators versus not using a vibrator, not that I'm saying everyone should or needs to, but I certainly do at times. And the way I feel about that is basically that if you don't have a hammer, you can theoretically bang a nail into the wall using the blunt end of a screwdriver. But if you have a hammer handy, then it just makes more sense sometimes. It's more efficient, it's faster, and it just gets the job done.
Right.
So it just depends on if I've got time for a screwdriver or if I happen to need the hammer that day.
Very interesting.
That's the way I look at it. Because I used to, again, I was so shy, and the idea of even saying the word vibrator would make me blush, and now I just have a whole different way of looking at things where I'm just like, practically speaking, it works for me. I'm a busy woman, I'm a mom, and so practically speaking, that it definitely works for me, and I definitely use that sometimes. But again, oftentimes it's to me, it doesn't start as a sexual process for me. It's not about, oh, I need to go and do this because of I need to release sexual energy. Moreover, it's a time for me to connect to me, and really, I feel like I said before, really closest to God. And this to me makes sense if we truly believe that our body is our temple, and that we're all created from the same source. Then we all essentially have that source within us. And so if my body is my temple, when I'm worshiping myself, I am then worshiping my creator as well, of wherever that energy comes from. And that's how I look at it, because I really, truly, for me, it's undeniable the connection between the two. And I'm not saying that certainly you need to connect to something sexually for it to be to have a spiritual experience. They're definitely are separate and work separately on their own. But for me, I found that the two were very connected.
So when you masturbate, do you fantasize?
Yes. And what's interesting is that I finally gave myself permission to, because I used to even feel bad about it. Certainly, if I was interested if I'd have a kinky thought, I would think, oh, I shouldn't be thinking that. I shouldn't be fantasizing about that. And I find that ever since this has happened for me, I've just kind of broken down a lot of boundaries and barriers, and there's basically not much that I don't think about or haven't thought about at some time.
Wow.
But again, it's not exclusive to fantasizing. Oftentimes, I feel passionate about life, and I understand that my creative energy, that's the place I create from too. That's where I feel like that's the place the same place that I connect to on that level is the same place I paint from. It's the source of my creativity, and I guess that makes sense, because my female parts, my womb, my uterus, is where I create life from. So it would make sense that in my root and sacral chakra, is also where I'm creating this sexual sacred energy as well.
Well, absolutely. I think there is this connection that is perhaps a little more organic for women around, sex being connected to creation, because we do, go through the menstrual cycle and have that capacity to give birth
and to create another human.
Exactly. And, men have a huge and very important part in that as well, but it may not be quite as obvious to them because they're not actually carrying all of that inside of their belly for an extended period of time.
Yes, I think that I definitely was, when my son and his father, I realized that a man seems to become a father after the baby's born, whereas a mom becomes a mother as soon as she finds out she's pregnant, because it's growing inside you, and you're basically for 9 months you're one.
I never went to term. Unfortunately, I had a miscarriage, but I was pregnant for about 3 months, and it was just strange, because I never got up in the morning thinking that or feeling like an individual. It was like everything was us.
Yeah. It was, I have to admit, pretty terrifying when I suddenly realized it was no longer just a me, it was an us.
Yes.
At the time, it was just, I really credit my son for much of my growth. I had been a pretty wishy-washy wimp of a person prior to that, and I think as soon as I gave birth to my son, I joked that that's when I got my balls. Because suddenly I grew claws and fangs and was ready to protect my child. I was a mama bear, and I found my fire, and I credit my son for that, most definitely. He is my 3-foot greatest teacher.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how I made him.
So where does your now, are you in a relationship with another person besides
with
your son?
with the father of my son? Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Where does sex with him come into your creative process, or does it?
Well, it's certainly it certainly comes into the creative process. I think that it has changed and evolved as I have, and so has he, as this has happened to me. And I think that it's just become, again, more about connecting and less about the act. I think also after we had the baby, we kind of lost touch with each other and became strangers living together in the same house. Because it was all about the baby, and I think we became, once I started really claiming my own sexuality and becoming comfortable with it, and really understanding again that it's a great way to connect, not just on my own, but to connect to my partner,
right.
And things have really changed, and it's become it was always great, but it's become a higher, better, different, and definitely, I would say, certainly my love of masturbation has definitely fueled my partner sex and certainly hasn't diminished from it, which is, you know, the old wives' tale. But definitely...
Yes, the same thing when I was working as an escort, people think, oh, well, that must mean that you come home all tired and not interested in sex. And I was like, are you kidding me? I came home horny.
And I feel like then that's what I was saying, is I'm basically horny about life. And it's just, I find that I'm just, I find, well, you were saying last week how you wanted to redefine, I felt very connected to what you said about redefining sex. Because really, I find the
our
idea...
Our definitions are very limiting.
Yes. I also have a problem just with all our limits and all of our labels that we put on ourselves, and I really feel that once you're able to kind of break down your own limitations and kind of not only ask yourself what you believe, but why you believe it, and most of the time you'll find if it's a negative belief, you'll realize that, well, it's not necessarily yours. You picked it up somewhere. And if it's not serving you, the great thing about beliefs is that you can change them because you're in control and you can choose what your own mind decides. And so I found that as soon as I started to really question not so much what I believed but why I believed it, and started to really realize that I had been putting so many limitations on my own everything, certainly my own pleasure, and as soon as I started to kind of take those limitations and barriers away, I really started to just enjoy my own life so much more, all aspects of it, sex included, but even my art became something better, something different. It was fresher. It was... Really, I felt like I have a message now in my art, and it's not just me painting pretty pictures.
And what is your message, Amanda?
I really think my message would be, if I had one message to give, which is just, I think we need to just stop judging ourselves first, and then everybody else. Basically, we all just need to start putting down the stones and realize that we're human beings, or moreover, as Terry Hinkle written in his book, we're spiritual beings having a human experience as opposed to human beings having a spiritual experience. And the idea is that we all make mistakes, but there's a reason that hindsight is 20/20, and that's because you then have all the facts and you know how it played out.
Right.
So of course you can decide that you, looking back over something, it's real easy to judge yourself harshly and judge others. And I think that we never really as soon as you start judging someone or something, you aren't able to really get to the heart of it, because you've already started to put limitations on what it is and what it can do. And I really think that once I stopped judging myself so harshly and just took a step back and looked at myself honestly and from a broader perspective, I realized that my biggest realization was that my life was about me, and I wanted to start living it.
Your life is what?
About me. So my voice cracked there.
Okay.
My life is about me, and I think that each one of us kind of forgets that our life is about us, and we're living for so many other things and other people, and based on limitations of what people will think or I can't do that. And the idea is that
especially, don't you think, as women and when you think about mothers, there's definitely an attitude that one's life should be about, you know, servicing your children, taking care of your children, taking care of your family, being of service, you know, it's kind of the...
Yeah. and for the
long-suffering Madonna.
Yes, and there's a huge fallacy with that. And I, the first year of my son's life, I was definitely guilty of that, and I ran myself ragged, and I wasn't taking care of myself. And then it dawned on me that if something happens to me, if I don't take care of me, then I can't be there to protect my son. And so the best thing I can do for my son and my family is to make sure that my son's mother is okay. And I'm an intrinsic part of my family, and I'm very important to my son's welfare, and therefore, in order to take care of him to the best of my abilities, I need to take care of myself. But that's not what we're taught. We were taught, or what we see is again, that women, especially mothers and wives, are supposed to be living for their children and basically putting themselves last.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's
certainly the model that my mother taught me.
Well, and my mother had an extreme circumstance, but very much the same thing. She never really took care of herself. She always put she was always putting them us first. And she never took care of her own needs or her own health, and to her own detriment. And later years, now my mother's health is really not that great, and she's, and that has to do with just the constant stress and the not taking care of herself. And then she was taught that by her mother, who was taught that by her mother. Well, we really need to stop that cycle and realize that as women, the best thing we can do for everybody in our lives is to start really taking care of ourselves and to start loving ourselves more.
Oh, absolutely. Now we have a couple of comments here. So hold on a second. I'm responding to one of our online listeners right now. His name is Chad Kelly, and he says, "Such interesting artwork." And then we've got Terry Hinkle again checking in with us, and he says, "It is so much fun hearing the two very powerful women having an empowering conversation with very important information."
And
then
we've got
Greg Autry, who says, "All women are goddesses." And actually, some of these comments came in underneath a thumbnail that I chose from your website, which looks like a kind of like a Cleopatra Egyptian type woman wearing a headdress, but right in the middle of her forehead is a goddess figurine that reminds me a little bit of the goddess of Wallendorf.
Yes, it is. That was my intent with the Venus of Willendorf, because my interest in art started the first time that I opened a book and saw the Chauvet Caves and saw the ancient cave paintings. And I've always felt very connected to these ancient paintings on cave walls, and also these Venus of Willendorf figurines, these symbols of the divine feminine, and she is absolutely, completely the opposite of what we've been told is what the perfect woman is. She's big and plump and juicy, and she just to me symbolizes really the divine feminine, and I have her in the forehead of Queen Nefertiti, and to me I really feel that. I'm really connected with Egyptian art specifically, and I feel that there's very, but also just all the ancient art, and really see in the art, you will see the connection between sexuality and art, especially the artifacts from prior to 2,000 years ago, and just how important in these cultures that sexuality, especially for the women, but sexuality was very important, and it was connected to spirituality, and we've severed that in the last 2,000 years. But that connection had always been there. It didn't go anywhere. It still was there.
Right.
But we've just been confused or stepped away from that. And I think perhaps I won't go into a religion, but I really feel, I have a friend who says that religion has given spirituality a bad name. but it was separated for good purpose, and the idea that, you know, there's a reason why there were no women there present when the Bible was written, and that was because the suppression of women was planned, the suppression of this very powerful energy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's basically
I think so, too. Now, I asked Chad Kelly what he thought about your assertion that sex helps your art, and he says, well, passion and aggression can be channeled in different ways. Our bodies are vessels, as is the canvas.
Could you read that again? I'm sorry. I didn't...
Passion and aggression can be channeled in different ways. Our bodies are vessels, as is the canvas.
Yes. It's the energy is there with how you, and again, that comes in, free will comes into play in a choice. And it's the idea of that same energy can be used, as you said, for anger or for passion. And the idea is that it, to choose to use that energy for something positive. And as opposed to letting aggression or if there's an excess of energy, letting it build up and having it, come out in an inappropriate way. Then the way that I have found is either painting or self-pleasure, it's just a way better way to go for all involved.
Well, we've got a little more interaction coming on here now. Lee Truskin says, I asked a question, I said, does sex improve art? And Lee Truskin came back and said, I keep dropping the brush. Okay, Lee, maybe just do one thing at a time. Now, Eric Johnson, he asks, hi, Veronica and Amanda. I'm listening to you and wondering if men ever approach masturbation like this. I've usually heard only women talking like this. Is there a gender gap here, or do I only listen to women? And of course, Eric, we're not sure if you only listen to women, but Amanda, what do you think? Does this apply to men?
Well, my answer to that would be, I definitely think maybe right now women are more
advanced.
But it's
this concept,
although definitely men do think of things. I think men think about this most definitely, and the proof is that Terry Hinkle wrote Plan B. It's all about celebrating the divine feminine and also about harnessing that energy. And I think that men tend to, and that's, again, a cultural thing, and that's something that I hate to use the word society, but it kind of seems that for I don't know the men that I have spoken to. I do know some. I have some male friends who feel very, very much that spirituality and sexuality is connected, and they practice tantric sex. But I do think that perhaps it, from what I have seen, from what I know, I certainly think that the women I know are more open to this belief and this concept than the men I know. But that's just the people I know. So.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if this is true or not, but it does seem to me that women are maybe a little more conscious about pursuing their growth, because probably because we went through that whole feminist movement where there was a lot of unrest. We're trying to rebirth the goddess. We're trying to reclaim our history. We're trying to get a dollar for a dollar worked. So there is kind of this sense of wanting to improve things, but I know that I've certainly met a lot of men who are sometimes kind of, satisfied with the status quo. Not necessarily motivated to go out and explore new paradigms. Now,
that's a big generalization,
but, that's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about all those wonderful enlightened men that we know
we're talking about the average Joe. And that, I think, what makes maybe my story a little interesting is that for a while I had been nervous to talk about this awakening, as I called it, because I thought, well, I don't have any letters after my name, and I didn't go on a walkabout, and I haven't been to a temple, and this just happened.
But your art! Your art's your credential.
Well, this is what I realized is that, because I firmly believe that's one of my strongest beliefs is what one man or woman can do, another man can do, or woman.
Right.
And I really strongly feel that maybe that's why that is my message, is that if I, who was just in my home and up in the woods, could start to have realizations and start to feel like there was something more that I wanted in my own life, and then start to make those changes happen and be the change I wanted to see in my own life. If I can do it, then anybody can.
Yeah, Eric Johnson, we just wanted to one answer to your question is that we know of at least one man who's very much on board for this stuff. His name is Terry Hinkle. He's actually posted a couple times to my wall tonight, and he wrote something called Plan B, which is very much about channeling the goddess and bringing back some very sex positive paradigms. So.
And I actually
the men are out there. They really, really are, and some of them are actually on the cutting edge and on the forefront of this, and you know, not just playing catch up. But there's also some lag, I think, culturally too.
I do agree with that. It's unfortunate, but and it's hard. Again, nobody wants to make generalizations, but at this point, I feel that culturally there is a big gap. And I think that perhaps, I'm not sure, but I think it's possible that maybe women are just more sensitive to the more divine feminine energies. I'm not really sure. I think it may have also to do with the fact that men and women, when women make love, when women have sex, they're engaging not only their root chakra, but also their sacral chakra, the place where we feel from. And so I think for women, I just think that... genetically, or just the way we are made up, we're not making love from the same place as a man. Just from his root, it's just more of a primal act. Whereas for a woman, it is still that primal act, but again, her emotions are more heavily engaged than men.
Well, and as a sexologist and a former escort, I'm going to have to say that, in my opinion, it all depends on how you have sex with a man or a woman, because if you are just stimulating a man's penis or a woman's clitoris and to the point of ejaculation, and both genders do it and can ejaculate, you are stimulating one place energetically, but if you're actually, you know, stimulating the pelvic floor, the G-spot, the vagina, the cervix of a woman, all of those places are, you know, bringing up a different kind of sexual energy. And the corollary that I find with that is stimulating a man's G-spot and or prostate, if you prefer. Some people prefer the term prostate. But to me, a G-spot's a G-spot is a G-spot, because I've had my finger up men and women, and it all feels the same. and pretty much there is a very, very similar sexual response. An internal orgasm on either gender usually takes them to a place that's very emotional. I've seen a lot of men cry, have these amazing all-over body orgasms for the very first time in their life. And so I know that type of sexual response is available to men. But, of course, they do have to get over, any kind of homophobia in order to really fully embrace that and enjoy it.
Right, and it's the idea of you having to break down those barriers and basically let go of any shame maybe past beliefs on something.
But I've had a lot of men tell me, I wish I could come like a woman. I go, you can. You absolutely can. All you got to do is keep an open mind. And don't clench. Take a deep breath and say, ah.
Don't quit. And I actually, on my, I have a few mandalas that I've created specifically using that sexual.
Yes, and by the way, just so you know, we run a little bit late here in the Shame Free Zone because we're the last show on the lineup. So we're going to run about 8 minutes over the hour, and this would be a good time for us to talk about your amandalas, because this is your invention, and your name is actually in it. So it's not just a mandala, it's an amandala.
That was just such a happy accident that my name happened to be Amanda. And I just one day when I had first started making them, and I was like, I'm making mandalas. And then I thought, aha, an aha moment. I could call them amandalas. And actually, originally I called them amandalalalalas, but that is just too long. What they are is basically, for I do them in an individual basis. I have done some that are specifically for a meditation, let's say on the root chakra or the sacral chakra, but they're specifically meant to, for each individual person, I put inside the elements using the concept of alchemy and basically just working with energy. And I put in the visual elements or symbols into one giant, what I like to call a soup, and I mix for each individual person based on what they have specifically, what they've decided is their intention for their mandala or what they want to call into their life. And I put those elements into this big collage, this big soup, and it always starts with a hand-painted underpainting, and then I work on it in the computer. And then I basically just stir the soup until it comes, until it creates a desirable image. And this then gives you something. The energy is all inside there, but you don't need to necessarily, you can't pick out any one specific image. It becomes one big image with all the elements intertwined, and they're in there for the person to meditate on. And it's a really unique and interesting experience, because inside your mandala is everything that you have specifically asked for, and then it gives you something while you're meditating to look at and to really focus your energy on yourself, and to take that time to just ground yourself.
And the one that you created for me, I have to say, it feels a little unfamiliar, which seems about right, since I was asking to bring in energy that I need that I don't tend to, you know, attract to myself. And it also reminds me of the, what do they call those, kaleidoscopes?
Yes, yes. And yours specifically, it actually ended up being a bit of a surprise to me, too. I get surprised by the end result when I put it through the program. Because I had put very little, I hadn't put that much red or that much green in. And yet those were the two that really popped out. And the red really being significant of the root chakra and basically taking care of your own needs. And then the green for the heart chakra and basically loving to yourself and giving to yourself of the time and energy that you deserve, and also that you put out for other people. I find what I have found is I've done quite a few of these for people who are in the industry of helping others, whether it be what you're doing or even I work for one woman who's a light worker. Another I did one for a woman who was a psychic, and what I found was oftentimes when you're working, especially if you're also in your occupation, helping other people and expending a lot of your own energy to help other people with their own issues and problems and resolving their conflicts, sometimes you tend to forget to do that for yourself. And the idea is that you need to fill back up your well. If the well runs dry, then you can't help anybody. You can't give anybody a glass of water.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You need to really make sure to replenish for yourself. And that's really what I picked up for you, was that you just really needed to just give yourself and make the time for yourself to do or to have the time to just enjoy your life as it's unfolding, and to not get caught up in just working, and you need to really spend time to pamper yourself, as you had said you'd wanted to spend more time taking care of yourself. And it was really evident it was interesting, because that was really what was evident and came out in the mandala when it was finished, and it surprised me, because I really had not put that much right in.
That's amazing. Just amazing. Yeah, I am. So how does one use a mandala?
Usually what would happen is that would happen like it with you when you sent me an email with your intention of what you wanted to call, and then I would have a reading with the person for about 15 minutes, either by phone or Skype, and then I would create the mandala and then send them the file via email, a JPEG file, which they can then print out however large or small they want. But usually I recommend to use them on your computer. I find that when they're illuminated on the computer screen, they seem to pick up a little bit more energy. And I would just recommend that the person sits in front of the computer, makes himself really comfortable, sits comfortably. It's important to pay attention to your breath and to just center yourself, and then open the file. And sometimes I play music on my computer, or sometimes I just sit in silence. And I just sit and you gaze at the center of the mandala and spend usually 5 to 15 minutes just focusing on whatever the intention was that you had asked for in the first place with the mandala. Always I give a mantra with the mandala. It's something that comes to me as I'm creating it, of basically what is the main theme for this one person of the mandala. And then it's important to try and keep that in mind while you're looking at it and spend that time with yourself, where you're basically concentrating on all inside this are all the energies that you, and symbols of all the things that you want in your life. And it's not about just positive thinking, but it's about choosing to to put your attention on the positive things that you can change. I think we tend to get really caught up in our lives and complain and look for the negatives. And I find that when you do that, you're just calling more negatives in. But if you're able to really concentrate on what you want out of life and be really clear with yourself, your life just seems to get all the difficulties that you thought were there seem to kind of fall away.
Hmm.
Wow. And I find that basically it's just a way to get back centered into yourself and to refocus on yourself.
Well, yeah, I've been staring at it while we're talking, and it's kind of hypnotizing.
This one really is one of my new favorites. I find it, and it's funny because when it came out red, I thought, I just hadn't intended it to be that bright, and I hesitated. I was thinking that maybe I should make a different one. I hesitated with it. I wasn't sure. Then something just kept telling me, no, that's what she needed. So I was like, okay, well, I can't decide what's right. It's just,
I love it. Now, we got a couple more comments on here. The question again was, does sex improve art? And Chad Kelly had said passion and aggression can be channeled in different ways. Our bodies are our vessels, as is the canvas. And Jason Grace says, I'm with Chad on this one. And John Blanchard says, it may or may not improve art, but it's fun.
For me, it was a twofer.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, this interview has gone really fast. You're so much fun. We've got about 1 minute left, and what I would like for you to do is tell our listeners how they can contact you and what you could do for them.
Okay, well, I'm on Facebook, Amanda G. Wright. I also have a group, Amanda G. Wright, Muse for Hire. I'll put the links on your wall.
Okay.
But my email to contact me for any questions or for an Amandala or an inspiration board, my email is amandalas@live.ca.
Okay.
I'll leave that link. And that would, and again, there's also my Amanda G. Wright at www.redbubble.com/people/Amanda G. Wright. And that'll bring you to my page. And on my page, I have my artwork, but also I have an ad that's clickable link. It takes you right to my Facebook group, and I also have clickable links that take you to my Amandala site, and vice versa. On my Amandala site, I have one that takes you to Amanda G. Wright.
Oh, that's great. I've already posted your website to my wall, so.
So it's all it's interlinkable, and again, so contact me by email.
Yeah. Okay, and you can actually, then she can make a mandala for you. And so I was going to post the other item, but I've just decided that it's too personal and I want to keep it private. But let me tell you what it was. It's called a personal inspiration board. And it's amazing. Every piece of this is artwork that Amanda has created herself. And she put together this personal inspiration board, which contained all the elements that I am actively pursuing or pulling together in my life right now, even the title of my next book. And she puts together in this beautiful, beautiful painting that just makes you feel like it's actually going to come true.
I had so much fun making that one. That one was just really special. But it's, again, I think focus is what's important, is that we lose focus of what we want in our own life, and oftentimes we kind of lose track of what is our intention, what would we like to call it, what do we want? And I think it's important to, again, the inspiration boards are a more direct visual reminder, whereas the mandalas, all the elements are in there, but sometimes you also need a reminder of little notes or quotes or whatever it is to keep you on track.
And it's fun. It's fun.
It was so
inspiring.
Fun.
So, Amanda, we are going to have to sign off now. But, you know, you were just so much fun, and I hope when you get more art, and I'm sure you are so prolific, I'm sure you're going to have tons more in no time, but maybe in a few more months we can have you back to show us some more of your beautiful art.
I would love that. I had such a good time. I had butterflies for no reason.
Yeah! The butterflies are a good thing. Bless your butterflies.
Yes. My butterflies were multiplying as the show was getting closer, but thank you so much. I had a great time.
Well, you're a total delight, and I can't wait till you have an art book, and I'd be happy to blurb the cover for you.
Well, then, that's a date.
Okay, it's a date.
I'm definitely starting to get my work together, and I would like to do a book, so I will definitely get back to you on your blurb.
You have to do it.
I'll hold you to your word.
It'll be my pleasure, my distinct honor.
Thank you so much, and really, I really commend you on everything that you're doing and what you stand for, and basically just the idea of breaking down the barriers of shame, and it's wonderful what you do. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Amanda, and I love your art. I just the picture on page one, how I became shameless and proud of it with the girl naked.
That caused a little bit of controversy, but I'm very proud of that one.
Good.
The more controversy it causes, the better it is. At least it's got a message.
we'll talk about that next time you're on.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, sweetheart. Sleep tight.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Yeah.